Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob.
Begin with two very famous Chicago sisters.
Yeah, two of the most famous Chicago sisters who went on to become two of the most famous advice columnists in the world, Bob. They were born this week, Ann Landers and Dear Abby, twin sisters whose real names were Esther Pauline and Pauline Esther Friedman. They were born July 4th, 1918, moved to Chicago as young women, and it's here where they separately forged big names as advice columnists. Esther Pauline, a.k.a. Ann Landers, started dishing out advice first at the Chicago Sun-Times, and she developed this huge following. There was nothing like her. And eventually 90 million people would be accessing her stories, her advice every single week. Her sister, Dear Abby, jumped on the bandwagon second. And originally it caused a little bit of a falling out because she's like, why are you doing it too? Can't you do something else? But they later reconciled, and they both were extremely successful in their own rights. But Dear Abby was the racier of the two. Ann Landers often was the one who solicited the help of top doctors, mental health experts, and psychologists in order to dish out her advice. And she really made it mainstream, Bob, as you'll recall, to talk about things that were sort of taboo at the time, gay relationships, divorce, mental health issues. She talked about all of them, and she was a respected truth teller, a straight talker, very much appreciated for that. She was the one who popularized the phrase, wake up and smell the coffee, about being in a toxic relationship and leaving, making choices, difficult choices to leave. People trusted her. We pulled an interview here, Bob, I think you'll really appreciate here, explaining why she was so successful, always grounded in knowing who she was.
She had a very good sense of humor, too. I used to do a bit on radio, the BS Love Counselor, and I once talked to her about it on the show, and she played right along. No one ever really replaced her in terms of popularity, did they?
No. No, they didn't. I mean, Dear Abby, her sister, almost drew about the same amount of following, but really replacing her, no. I'd say no, Bob, just in terms of her trust.
And now, back 1 year ago, and do we have to talk about hot dog eating? Because I'm still trying to get the video that was on the news with Joey Chestnut out of my mind. You know what I mean?
It's that annual thing where you're just like, you're kind of thinking about your own barbecue, and you're maybe not feeling so, you're feeling a little queasy to begin with, and then you watch these guys scarfing down multiple hot dogs. You're like, oh, do I have to? But we watch. Yeah. And 1 year, Bob, 1 year in the entire 50-year-plus history, a Chicagoan has won, and it's a Palos Heights native, Patrick Bertoletti. He beat the other eaters, scarfing down 58 hot dogs and the buns in 10 minutes, and he won the mustard belt. This guy is a Kendall College, Kendall Culinary School grad, and a huge Chicago hot dog lover. A lot of family back in Frankfort, Illinois, which they had a little bit of fun with. And when it came to his proudest moment, we pulled a clip here, Bob. Bertoletti said he found it kind of tough, like you might have, to tie that championship mustard belt around his waist after the big win. Here he is after winning the Nathan's Coney Island hot dog eating contest.
I hope Patrick is still with us. That's all I have to say.
After all of that, can you believe it? He did stick up for the Chicago-style hot dog, by the way. I don't know if you've ever had a Coney Island dog, Bob, but they put all that meaty chili on it. I'm not a fan.
No. Chicago's the way to go. We have some all-star history to mention now, don't we?
Yeah, very first all-star game of all time held in Chicago this week in 1933, Bob. While the Century of Progress World's Fair was underway, it was a tremendous spotlight on the city at a difficult time. The Great Depression was underway, but July 6, 1933, Comiskey Park, 47,600 fans in attendance. $45,000, by the way, was given to help players, struggling players and retired players. Remember, baseball players didn't make the big bank contracts back then, all of them necessarily. So they were helping out those players during the Depression. And the game was broadcast on radio stations across the country. Unfortunately, very little of that first game was preserved. The next year and after that, they preserved them. But we did pull a clip here of Major League Baseball, a retrospective, a look back at the first All-Star game, and there is film preserved from one very magical moment.
A Chicago sports writer came up with the idea for the game. Deadheads will remember this day. Anna?
No question, no doubt about it, Bob. It's 30 years since the Grateful Dead performed their final show right here at Chicago's Soldier Field. July 9th, 1995 was the final show with Jerry Garcia. So the tie-dye curtain came down at that moment, and they never performed together again as a band. In fact, sadly, 1 month later, almost exactly to the date, August 9th, 1995, Jerry Garcia passed away. And those who were at Soldier Field will recall that day, will recall that he was shaky and they were worried about him. There was this period of slow decline. He started to flub his lyrics, and it's still super entertaining and engaging, but people did say they noticed it. And at the age of 53, Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead had been performing for 30 years, over 2,300 live shows. Chicago was one of his favorite places. He had been here performing 70 different dates. And so a lot of memories for Deadhead fans. And here's Jerry Garcia, the final encore at that final show of his life, right here at Soldier Field, 1995, this week.
Well, he is gone, but the cult lives on, doesn't it?
Yeah, the band said, we will never, ever perform as the Grateful Dead after Jerry Garcia's passing, but they have done some, they wanted to perform music, they're musicians, and they said that, so they have performed offshoot bands like Dead and Company, and, mm-hmm. You can still catch them.
This week, way back in 1885, there was a Chicago invention that is still in use today, isn't it?
You know, it's interesting. This one really fascinating, Bob, because Sarah E. Good developed what was kind of the early inspiration for the Murphy bed. This week in 1885, she received a patent, becoming the first African-American woman ever to get a U.S. patent. She was a furniture store owner on Chicago's South Side, and she developed this, like, cabinet bed in response to the crowded housing conditions that many families were living, multi-generationally, and lots of kids in very small apartments. And so she came up with this space-saving piece of furniture, and it made a huge splash. People thought it was a really cool invention. She was asked to exhibit it at the Illinois State Fair. The Chicago Tribune did a story on her. And however, that invention then was kind of morphed into what became the Murphy bed. A West Coaster was inspired by it. 10 years later, William Lawrence Murphy developed a bed that would fold into the wall, and then he started a company around it. But pretty cool history there, right here in Chicago.
Never knew that. It should be the good bed, though, really,
right,
shouldn't it?
Right,
yeah. And finally,
sounds better.
Finally, the Sybaris. Is this place still in business?
Still around. Oh, Bob, don't act like you don't know. Come on. Kids, if you don't know what the Sybaris is, please ask your parents. Uh-huh. But don't you remember the old ads, Bob, that would run on TV? They'd show the romantic suites and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, a couple having cocktails in a whirlpool.
Right. They had like the champagne and bubbling hot tub that you could see that was shaped like a champagne glass or whatever.
Yeah.
And, and you're in sweet pools with waterfalls and these images of tropical islands. It was actually way ahead of its time because it was like this romantic getaway idea developed by a local entrepreneur named Ken Knudsen, because he's like, couples need to get away and without leaving town. It doesn't have to be expensive, but shed the stress and your normal routines and just do something for you, the couple. And so it started, he said, it was inspired by a trip to Woodfield Mall when he and his wife bought this fancy romantic waterbed and bedroom set. And all of his wife's friends were jealous because they're like, you have this like romantic retreat in your home. So he's like, wait a minute, I think we have something here. Like the very next day, he said he started calling around to buy local motels because he had this idea for the Sybaris. And it struck a nerve. It's been booming pretty much right out of the gate. And we pulled a clip, one of those old TV ads that you'd see on late night TV back in the day. I don't know if they still run these, though, alerting couples that there is this new romantic oasis right here in town.
When I was a feature reporter at Channel 2, I did a story on the Sybaris, and the news director looked at it before it went on the air, and he said, We're not running this. We don't want you associated with this place.
That was it.
That was the end of that. Yeah.
Fascinating.
They have two, don't they? They have a couple.
Yeah, they've got multiple. They built one in Frankfurt. They got Downers Grove, Northbrook, Indianapolis. There's one in Wisconsin as well. And just recently, Bob, just so you know, you're asking, are they still around? A big TikToker just posted staying there and got 10 million views. They had to set up a call center just to field all the out of town people who wanted to stay there.
No.
So still going strong. If you know what I mean. You and Marianne are on TV this weekend.
And no wonder why you don't see the commercials anymore. They don't need any. Yeah, I have
it's
too much
fine.
Business. Thanks, Anna. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.